I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. We all have a story, and I believe by telling these stories, we can inspire and empower each other on our self-care journey. This season, the Good Glow has teamed up with ReproMed, Ireland's leading fertility clinics. Having been through IVF myself, I understand how daunting a fertility journey can be. I'm proud to partner with ReproMed, whose world-class team offer the expertise, empathy, and compassionate care needed to help and support you. With clinics in Galway, Dublin, Cork, Drogheda, and Kilkenny, they are never too far away and will do everything possible to help you grow your family. Visit ReproMed.ie for more, and now their sister clinic, ReproScan.ie, is available for early pregnancy and gender scanning. Hello and welcome to season 11 of the Good Glow podcast. Today I am chatting to Roz Purcell, and I am really looking forward to you listening to this conversation. This week has been up and down for me, I think, along with the rest of the world. I watch the news and it breaks my heart. We were due to do an embryo transfer in Ukraine on the 21st of February. So watching the news and seeing the pain and suffering in Ukraine has just been so awful. And I know so many people feel the same way. So this week, I felt like the sea was calling me. And I only started sea swimming in the last year or two. The sea has always terrified me. And I don't like cold water. But this week, I just really felt this urge that I wanted to get in. And I went to my counsellor on Wednesday, and I was talking about how sometimes I feel crippled by fear, and it keeps me at home, and it keeps me safe, and it keeps me in my comfort zone. And she said something that really made me think, and I've been repeating this ever since. She said, "I choose not to live in fear. I choose not to live in fear." So I took myself off to the beach yesterday in Killiney. It looked so cold in there, and I decided to listen to what my heart was telling me, which was get into the sea, even though my head was saying it's too cold, it's too rough, you need to just go home. So I jumped in, and I kept repeating to myself, "I choose not to live in fear. I choose not to live in fear." And I got out, and I just felt so amazing for the entire day. This week, I am joined on the podcast by Rosanna Purcell. And Roz is someone who I've wanted on the podcast for years, but she's so busy. And I knew that our paths would cross when the time was right. I got so much out of this conversation. We spoke about the before and after in her life. And that for Roz was her eating disorder, and how that changed her life and how that impacted her time in New York and her relationships and her everyday life. We speak about the Me Too movement and her experience of modeling back in the noughties. We also speak about putting ourselves in that box and why we always tell ourselves we're a certain type of person. And my favorite part of this interview is right at the very end, when I ask Roz who her guru is, and I adored her answer. I hope you enjoy. So I've been waiting to have you on for so long. So thank you so much for making the time.
Well, look, thanks for having me, because obviously, you know, I think we have a very similar audience and everyone loves your podcast. So I'm delighted to be on.
Oh, I'm so grateful to have you on the podcast, Roz. And I have been watching you for years and years, and I admire everything you do. And I actually have never gotten the opportunity to say this to you before, but when I went back to work in October 2018, I was sitting at my desk And Instagram went down one day and it was offline for like 5 hours or something. And I was in work, and when Instagram came back, I was looking at your Instagram story and you said something that helped me start the Good Glow. So you you said Instagram has been down for, you know, how many hours? Doesn't that just go to show that you shouldn't rely on one thing? And I had built a little bit of a following through sharing my story. And when you said that, it stopped me in my tracks and it made me think, she's right. I need to think outside the box here. And I thought and thought about it for a couple of weeks. And then one day I thought, a podcast, that's what I'll do. So thank you so much for that inspiration.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And it's something I always say. And look, Instagram and TikTok, they all go down now and again. And even recently, my Instagram just disappeared for a day. And I was like, where's it gone? And that's why it's so important to put as much effort into traditional media, into community events, into newsletters, into a website. And look, I'm not perfect at it either. Like I could definitely update my website a little more. But, you know, it's really, really important to put more effort into things that you can actually control.
Yeah. And when you speak about that community piece there, and that's obviously a huge part of your business and your brand, how much do your community mean to you?
Well, I guess, you know, it's really, really important when you're online to think about who is following you. And I guess when it comes to community, I never really thought about having a community or growing a community until the Hike Life. And that really just happened completely organically. I was sharing quite a lot about hiking adventures in Ireland. I've been hiking all my life. There was a period probably in my early 20s where I didn't hike. But when I got back into it, I definitely shared it through social media. And I used to get tons of messages off people saying, oh, I wish I could do that, but none of my friends will go at the weekend because they're all out drinking, or I'd love to go, but I'm afraid I'll get lost. So I kind of was thinking to myself, you know, I'm very fortunate position that I can control my own schedule. So I can have Sundays off if I want them, or Saturdays. I can afford to create an event for free for people if they really want to get out. And I think one of the best things we have as people who have big platforms is to be able to share something we love. And if my thing is that I get to share hiking and get someone out on a really good outdoor experience for the first time and get them into it, that's a really good thing. So honestly, I think from growing the Hike Life, I understand the importance of a community and being able to give back. I think sometimes influencers get a bad rap. And look, sometimes I can see why. I think a lot of it is like, take, buy this and look at this and go over here to try this. And I think they forget that, like, we're in a very privileged position. So if you can actually give something back to your community, and look, not everyone is. Look, I've been at this for a long time and I'm very lucky. I'm at a position where I can do this and I can have free time and I can have free resources to be able to do this. I think it's quite important because we do owe them a lot.
And when, you know, you're standing at the side of a mountain and your community are showing up and you're going on these hikes, I guess you're seeing people arrive with all different mindsets. You know, people could be in the gutter, feeling so lonely, really needing that community. There could be other people that, you know, they're at the moment, they're going through a really good time and they're out and they're socializing and they're happy. So you must see just so many different types of people showing up.
Yeah, of course you do. And I think the biggest thing is for me, I keep the numbers quite small now, so I can actually get around and chat to everyone. There was a stage there where I was like, there's no way I can get around to chat to everyone. And you see people who have traveled like 4 or 5 hours just to make the hike that morning. And it's incredible. And it's so nice that I'm able to bring people together and do something that we all enjoy. Well, hopefully, it's kind of an accomplishment, like to start off your Sunday because you get to reach a summit. And it's just a chance to actually meet other people, engage face to face and get off our phones. Because I think especially after the last 2 years, we've all kind of lost touch with how to be sociable. And kind of, I suppose, we're so used to engaging with people online through our phones, we need to kind of start bringing back in actually going to events. And I definitely think hiking is a very safe space in terms of COVID and all that, because you're outdoors. And I also think as well, everyone's a little bit more stripped back. No one has their phone. Everyone's just in hiking gear. It's probably 8 a.m. the Sunday morning. No one's really looking their best. You know, we're all just there for the same thing, which is to get from A to B and come back and enjoy it.
Are you good at getting yourself out of the house? Because I've found myself over the past 2 years, and I was always kind of a person who liked my own company. So COVID almost did me a disservice because it really pushed me into my comfort zone at home. And now I'm finding it like even harder to get out there. But have you always been a person that's just getting up and getting out there?
Well, I think before COVID, I definitely was someone who just always got up, got out there, would train every single day, and was just a real nonstop from morning to evening. I was just could pack in as much as possible. I definitely think COVID has taught me to slow down a little bit, maybe a little too much. You know, I think I'm like you, where sometimes I've gotten so used to sitting in my house all day. I work from home anyway, that not leaving the house between getting up and going to bed isn't that unusual now, which I'm trying to get back out of that habit. And I think really COVID put me in a rut about doing everything at home and not having that time away from the house, not having that time to go do something sociable. So I'm definitely the same, and I'm finding it really hard to kind of get back into things. Now, I am quite a sociable person. Like, I get really good energy from being around loads of people. So instead of sometimes I think people go to events and they come back and they're like, oh God, I'm so drained. I love it. So I found COVID really hard because I like meeting new people and I love getting to chat to people and go to events. And yeah, I found that part really, really, really difficult. So while I'm really happy things are getting back and I can get back burning the ear off people, I'm also finding it really hard myself to actually wake up early, go for a walk and actually do those kind of small little things that used to be so natural, you know.
And you are an early riser. Like, I'll often get up and see that you've been out for a walk like hours before everyone wakes up. How do you get yourself out of the bed?
I find it hard, I'm not going to lie. And COVID was one of those things as well that really, you know, before COVID, I would just have gotten up at 6 a.m. or 5:30 every morning anyway. And I would just naturally have woken up at that time. I think with COVID, with not having much to do and the days were so long, you were trying to like shorten the days a little bit. I definitely got into a habit of sleeping in, which isn't a bad thing. You know, I think, as I said, COVID taught me I probably need to take a chill a little bit. You know, I was going 100 miles per hour. But I am still now back in the habit of kind of getting up at like 6:30 every single morning. And I'm just one of those people that if my alarm goes off, I'll just get up.
And then if you get up at 6, are you wrecked by 9 o'clock at night?
No. Oh my God. So I get really wired in the evening. So I do my best work from like 8 p.m. to like 11 p.m. And oh my God, I'm a genius at that time. The rest of the day, honestly, nothing's going on in my brain. And from 8 p.m. to 11, I could solve the world's problems. Yeah, it's a horrible thing because I'm trying to get some sleep and I'm coming up with the best ideas ever.
And so what does your evenings look like then? Are you editing in that time? Are you writing recipes or what are you doing?
Yeah, I am pretty bad at having boundaries of when to work and when not to work. So what I've realized about myself is from 6 a.m. till about 9 or 10, I'm really good at writing, really great at any kind of laptop work or just sitting down and getting work done. From about 10 till 4, it's like, I just want to go outside.
Okay.
I just want to go outside and have some fun and see what everyone's doing. It's like I have severe FOMO and I just want to go out and play. I'm like a child. I want to go out and play. And it's really horrible when the weather's good because, oh, it's very hard to get me to sit still and do something. So I've realized maybe that's a great time to be creative and get some stuff done. Like maybe it's filming, maybe it's recipe content. Perhaps that's when I go out and I do a trail and I come back and I write about it or something like that. So then once I get home at about 5 till 11, like I will just work.
Your enthusiasm for the day is inspiring.
Well, I think, you know what? A great thing about me is I do lots of different things. I do food, I do hiking, I do some beauty, I do a little bit of everything. So my days are always really interesting. And growing up, I used to always think I should just really pick one thing and just do that really well. Like, I remember with food, Natural Born Feeder, I was like, I should just concentrate on food and nail it rather than trying to do all these different things. But that is just not me. I would be too bored if I just did one thing. I love that how my life has kind of turned out now, where I get to do lots of different things. My days are never boring. I'm never doing the same thing.
I think for our whole lives, we were told pick one thing, be good at that, excel at that. But I think we've seen that, you know, just doing one thing can often make people feel miserable. Or, you know, if they don't feel like they're getting to their hobbies outside of their job or doing things that they love, that often that's just kind of pushing you into a rut.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you can end up just pigeonholing yourself. And I mean this in a sense of, say, if I went back and I just solely concentrated on food when I started Natural Born Feeder, and that's all I did. And if I went through a rut where I just wasn't creative and I couldn't come up with recipes, I have nothing else to offer people because I've just created a brand that's just one thing. Mm-hmm. And I think as human beings, we're not always going to be able to excel in one thing. Well, I know for me, that's definitely true. I go through periods where I'm not great at certain hobbies or certain things that I do, but I can still manage them because it's not the sole thing I focus on. So yeah, for me, it's always worked out that I do a little bit of everything.
And therefore you're curious and you're kind of open to where the universe might take you.
100%. Like if you said to me, what am I going to be doing in 10 years? I don't know. And I think that's the great thing about it. I could be doing something totally different in 10 years time. We literally live once in it. Like we have one shot at this life. I would rather have been someone who had 20 different jobs and I just had one job that I liked, didn't like, liked and went up and down and just, I don't know, did I like it or not? And I studied for it in college, so I just did it for the rest of my life. Absolutely not. I want to look back and be like, God, remember when I was a farmer in Limerick? Remember when I was an accountant in Donegal? Like, I don't care. Like, I want to try loads of different things because at the end of the day, like, this isn't, you know, Jerry always says it isn't a dress rehearsal. So if you don't know, if you don't try, you'll never know. And I kind of think there's a lot of people, I get a lot of messages of people saying, I've spent 7 or 8 years in college now and I've for this really great job and now I'm in it and I don't want to do it anymore. And it's like, why have we just developed this whole idea that we like have to do one thing in life? And if we change, we're kind of a failure or something. So I think it's really important. And I've definitely become so comfortable with the idea that in order to be happy and, well, for me, in order for myself to be happy with work, I just have to adapt and change when I get bored or something.
It's interesting you brought up Jerry there, and I know that you've been having conversations with Jerry for years and years. What stood out to me in Jerry's book, and this is something I guess I had to learn the hard way, is that you have a right to change your mind about who you are. So he speaks about, you know, why do we tell ourselves that we're a certain type of person? Oh, I'm personality type A, and this means I must do this. And today, you know, I was telling you that I'm kind of going through a bit of a rough time at the moment, and something in my heart and soul just said, I need to go to the sea today. So I got into my car, got the dog in the car and went to the sea and just had a walk and just kind of took it all in. And I felt so much better. But before I got sick, I always told myself that I hated being outside. What a ridiculous thing to tell myself for 32 years. You know, I told my, oh no, that's just not for me. I love to be under a blanket, or, you know, I don't like being cold. Mm. And all of these amazing healing opportunities that I was missing out on because I told myself I was a certain type of person. So I think you're doing amazing work with your enormous platform to remind people, like you said, it's not a dress rehearsal. We've got one shot at this.
Yeah. And you know what? Going back to what you said there, I actually read a book recently called Atomic Habits. Have you ever read it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I love the fact that he actually uses this. If you tell yourself you're a certain type of person, well, you are that kind of person. And I used to always be like, I'm just a real chaotic, messy person. I'm real creative and a bit of a disaster. And I mean that in a sense, like, you know, around me, like my bedroom, there's clothes flying everywhere. Like my office, there's stuff everywhere. And I was kind of living up to the standard that I was just telling myself the whole time. And I remember after reading that book, I started to be like, I'm actually a really organized person. I'm just like, it's just been hidden for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I have actually become now not great, but I've from that book and just kind of reinforcing that, I telling myself who the person I wanted to be, rather than just, I suppose, talking down to myself and being like, oh, that's just my personality, I'm really messy and chaotic. I'm not. But what's going on around me that's making me not clean up around me? Mm-hmm. So I definitely, yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I love that. And when you're out at the sea or hiking, and obviously not when you're doing hike life, but are you listening to things or are you just with yourself?
Oh, listen, I'm listening to things on the hike life too. I'm a big eavesdropper. I'm like, what's going on? No, it's funny. I actually always say that I'm the most accidentally nosy person ever. It's like I can't help it. I don't know, is it from being from Tipperary, but I'll go into a room and someone will be like, I know she said that. And I'm like, who? Oh, sorry, I actually don't know. I actually don't want to know who that just came out. So I am definitely the biggest eavesdropper you'll ever meet. But yeah, I guess when I go hiking, I won't listen to music or anything. I'll just enjoy the silence. And, you know, I'm probably even like that as well when I'm hiking with my boyfriend or my friends. Like, I'll also enjoy the silence. And I think it's really important to be around people who you can be silent with as well. But yeah, I've always felt very comfortable in the woods. So more so in the woods than in the sea or anything like that. And I think it's because we grew up on a mountain. So we were very lucky that our back garden was basically this massive woods that we could just like go off and disappear into for hours. And our parents would never think that we were missing. They'd never come look for us. So I've always felt, you know, I think I always get met off people when they see me going hiking in these kind of dark woods. And they'll always be like, are you not nervous alone? I know, obviously, with everything going on in Ireland, you have to be really, really careful. But I have to say, being around nature and in trees has always just made me feel extremely comfortable. And it's just because that's how we grew up.
And what does it do for you?
Well, so growing up, you know, if ever there was anything wrong in school or I had a breakup or something, you know, really traumatic as a teenager, that's, you realize it's not that traumatic. I would always go up to the woods and just like sit there. Mm-hmm. That was just kind of me, how I would deal with things. I wouldn't like scream or shout or have a fight or go into my room and cry. I would just go up to the woods. I'd probably cry in the woods too, but I would just go up there. So it was just, I suppose, from growing up, I don't know how to explain it. It was just where I went to process things.
When you look at your life, do you, and I think for so many people, there's a certain moment that kind of brings you from the before to the after. Do you feel like there is a before and after in your life up until this point?
Oh, definitely. I think there's before I had an eating disorder, and then once I kind of realized I was recovered from it, there was like a gap there of four or five years in my 20s where it was just like no man's land. I don't know what was going on, but it wasn't really me. It's almost like an eating disorder kind of took over the person who I was and had complete control for 4 or 5 years. So I suppose when you say what there's a before and after, what it made me think of, I remember going home when I was about 27, and I was with my older sister, Rebecca, and we were going for a walk in the woods. And she just said to me, she was like, you know, you've come so far. And I was like, oh yeah, I suppose you, myself, I hadn't noticed that much. And she was like, yeah, you know, like growing up, you're always such a really bubbly like teenager, you're always up for the crack, and like, you know, I was just wild, just having fun at every opportunity, never worried about anything. You know, if people ask me what I wanted to be, I'm like, sure, I'll find out, I'll just try loads of different things. And she was like, it's like one day, because I started not to come home quite a lot, because you know, I was really afraid if I would come home that I would binge eat or I wouldn't have control over my food. So I kind of stopped going home for a long time. And she said, it's like one day you came home and you were just like this completely different person. And I thought, God, that's really sad. You know, like whatever's after happening to her, she's after kind of growing into this like completely different person who's just really, really negative. And like, it was just like everything was just bad. And I was just gray, and it was like I was carrying around so much hate towards absolutely everything and everyone. And then she was like, you know, obviously I'd been around them for when I was going through my eating disorder, and I was very, very difficult to be around. And then I kind of disappeared again when I was in recovery and going to a counsellor. And I think I tend to kind of not disappear when I'm kind of dealing with something, but I kind of tend to just make sure I'm dealing with it mm-hmm. myself before I speak about it. And then she was like, and then all of a sudden, you know, you came home one day and you were just like back to 18, 19 year old you, in the sense that you were this really happy person again. And it was like whatever had taken you over was just completely gone. And that's when I kind of realized that for so many years, my eating disorder, I didn't want to get rid of it. It's really hard to explain, but I almost felt like it was just part of who I was. It was my identity. And when I would go into therapy, I was going to kind of almost tick a box. And when the thought of actually letting go of my eating disorder really didn't appeal to me, because I didn't know who I was without it. And when I recovered, and I remember having that conversation with my sister, I realized by actually recovering from my eating disorder, it actually brought me back to who I was, you know. And it had just stolen so many years from me. And it's such a shame, because I look back and I'm like, God, it was like the best years of your life, like from 21 to about 25. Like, I was just completely controlled by this voice in my head, said no to so many opportunities, lost so many friendships, relationships. You know, I just had so much hate towards myself, towards food. And, you know, obviously food is one of those things that brings people together. Food is not just food, it's occasions, it's holidays, it's so much more, it's birthdays, that it stole so much time from me. And I just remember being like, I'll never let that happen again.
And were you aware of that at the time, or is it only when you look back that you can see that?
It's only when I look back. Mm. When I was in the thick of it, I really, really genuinely thought that I was just this really diligent, strict person with food, and that everyone should eat like me anyway. Like, you know, this is, you know, at the same time, I look back and I'm like, well, I was hiding that I wasn't eating. And I would tell people I ate a lot more than I had. But for me, that wasn't suspicious behavior. It's really strange. Like, obviously, looking back now, I can see all these bad things that I was doing and, you know, how problematic my behavior was with food. But at the time, I just made sense of it all. At the time, I rationalized everything I was doing because I just needed to do it in order to be a certain size. And my priority in life was not living. It was not partners, it was not friendships, it was not work, it was what weight I was.
And that was all day, every day, for years.
All the time.
How exhausting.
Oh, was it so exhausting? Oh my God, I came out the other side and I was like, Jesus, I felt like I aged like 20 years, you know? But at the same time, I think I learned a lot in recovery, a huge amount that was just, you know, I always think that no matter what you're going through, like, investing time, and unfortunately for a lot of people, investing money, because it is quite expensive in therapy, is just fundamental to how you're going to live the rest of your life.
Yeah. And that is my goal for 2022. So I had a really bad night back in October, you know, the pressure, and I just felt like everything was getting on top of me. And I said to Jamie, like, I just don't feel like I'm well right now. And I said, you know what, in 2022, I don't care about Chanel handbags or anything like that. I am going to put every penny I have into therapy and, you know, really dealing with my unresolved trauma, because I'm on a wellness journey and I want to get to the next level. But I know that there's certain things that I really need to address. And like you said, it's so unfortunate that, you know, therapy is so expensive, because it's such a huge investment to do that. And for many people, it's not an option.
No. And, you know, that's definitely something I want to mention. Like, I was really, really lucky, especially when it came to getting help for eating disorder, that I had the resources, number one, the money and the time to actually go seek care immediately once I was really ready. And a lot of people just don't have that. And that's really, really, you know, that's really difficult for their families, their friends, and for them. And that's definitely something I know myself, like, at the moment, really trying to push for some sort of change with that and get more funding, because the funding for any eating disorder care in Ireland is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I've heard the horror stories. And that period of your life when you were 21 to 25, were you in New York for the majority of that time?
No, so I was in New York when I was about 20, and why I don't categorize that in, I suppose, the worst years was because it was only when I got back from New York that it really started. And by that, I mean, when I was in New York, I definitely picked up really bad habits. You know, I was just told to lose weight constantly. And even when I hit the targets that they wanted me to hit, it was just like, oh, well, you need to lose more. And I was constantly getting measured every week. And it was just, I think I was still at the time when I was like super confident. I was like, listen, lads, I'm tiny. Can't get any smaller, do you know? But then it was when I got home, and I think this was the part when the failure set in, that I didn't make it in New York.
Oh, right.
And it was really triggered. Well, a few things. I was obviously starving myself in New York. And when I got back, I started eating. Like, so I was like, oh my God, thank God I'm at home. And it was Christmas time and I just started eating. And I was only 18, 19 at the time. I was 19, 20, sorry, at the time. And I put on weight quite quickly, which is completely normal when you've been restricting yourself and then you just allow yourself, your body to just eat. And I was also at the age where my weight fluctuated anyway. So I put on quite a lot of weight very quickly. And like, there wasn't a huge difference. I think I just went up two sizes, but it was pointed out to me like really badly. By everybody, you know. So I think the matching of, I think, coming home from New York and feeling like such a failure because I hadn't made it, and then I think a rapid weight gain just because naturally I'd been restricting myself for months, that just really, really kicked off an eating disorder. And, you know, an eating disorder started just very innocently, like most people, with a diet.
Yeah. And what is that about coming home from the States and feeling like you're a failure if you haven't made it? Like my best friend Audrey, she went to LA to act for 2 years and came. And I know she's spoken about it before, you know, it was so hard for her to come home because she was so afraid of the questions of like, well, what happened? You know, why aren't you at the Oscars?
I think it's one of those things where I know for me, there was like loads of articles being like, Roz goes off to New York to model. And I was like coming back being like, doo-doo, no, didn't make it. But, you know, I guess it's one of those things now where I'm like, yeah, of course it didn't. There's millions and millions of girls there. Mm. And only like 10 make it every year. Like the chances were slim anyway, you know? And like, but I just really, really resented my body. Like I remember being like, just really hated myself because I was just blamed that my body wasn't naturally small enough, that that's why I didn't make it. When in fairness, there were just obviously so many variables. And I think weighing me and measuring me every week probably didn't do wonders for my confidence. So even when I'd go in for castings, I'd be like, sure, I'm not going to get this. you know?
It wasn't your path.
No, it wasn't. And you know what? I had a great time over there. You know, I lived with all these models from all over the world. And now they were real serious models. Like they were doing like Victoria's Secret. So I was just like the dud. I was just like, they're having the crack. You know what I mean? I was just like, listen. But it was at the same time, it was, I suppose, the catalyst. I think it was a thing that was about to trigger something really bad in my life. Mm. But I just didn't see it yet. And like a lot of people have said to me, you know, when I've spoken about having an eating disorder, a lot of people have said, but sure, you were going to the modeling industry, like, what did you expect? And I was like, I was like a naive 20-year-old come from Tipperary. I expected it to be America's Next Top Model and I was going to be successful straight away, obviously, you know? And I expected that if someone told me to get in shape, I would really quickly and it'd be grand. You know, I didn't overthink it and yeah. I was very naive going into it. And I always thought I had a really good head on my shoulders, but still diet culture and eating disorder got me.
Yeah. And how sick are you of people asking you about Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's one of those things where I'm like,
please stop asking me that.
No, no. When people say it, I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, that is so weird, isn't it? It's so weird that he was running Miss Universe. And it's so weird that I've met him. And sometimes every now and again, people, you know, bring it up where like there's a funny photo of him doing my hair at Miss Universe. And I'm like, Isn't that mad? Mm. And you know, I look back and I feel like that was just a totally different person.
Yeah, it's a different life.
Because I was so young, like, and you know, even meeting him, when I think back to it, it feels like it was more of a movie that I watched more than being there. And it's just, it's mad because obviously at the time when I met him and he was a judge on Miss Universe and, well, he actually ran Miss Universe and I was with Trump Models, he was just the guy off The Apprentice, you know? So it's really strange, you know, even to see where he is now. So yeah, it's not a claim to fame. I love, you know, I'm like,
yeah, it's not an association. When you were in New York modeling, like there was obviously, you know, now we know all about Me Too and things like that. But did you ever feel like you were kind of in a vulnerable position? Like you said, you're going over there from Tipperary. It's the big bad world. How did you cope with that?
Yeah, like I definitely found abroad, and not even in America. More like when I modeled in Europe and South Africa, there was definitely scenarios where I was like, now I look back older and I'm like, that was completely wrong. And there was definitely times where you were on shoots where you're like, that was just completely inappropriate, but no one said anything. Like the other models or the photographer never said anything. And I suppose, unfortunately, back then, like 10 years ago, I was just kind of, I grew up with the mentality of just always being polite.
Yeah.
And my way of dealing with it was just kind of like disassociating myself with the situation and just like just pretending that nothing happened. And unfortunately, I do think it was very, like when I think back to it, I'm like, I think it was very, very common for like to get groped on shoots and stuff like that. Now, at the same time, it's not something that I look back and I dwell on. I'm just like that. I'm very sad for myself that I wasn't able to stand up for myself or that I thought that was normal.
Yeah. You know? And we were also, I suppose, growing up, and it was no one's fault, but we were always told to be like good girls. So even with my little Pia now, she's 5. I don't really like to call her a good girl because, you know, I don't really know if that's the right thing that we should be telling our daughters, that they should be a good girl.
Yeah, you know, I guess when I look back at that, any of those situations, I always kind of think to myself that I was stupidly polite to people that weren't nice. Mm-hmm. And that was just how I was kind of brought up to be. And I wish, you know, I was always brought up not to be like a problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So now, look, I also think back then, unfortunately, it happened so regularly in the industry that no one called it out, that you almost felt like this is part of this is unfortunately a part of it. Now, nothing like that ever happened to me in Ireland. And that's why I loved coming home. Now, obviously coming home to Ireland, I felt like failure from New York, but actually modeling in Ireland, I loved it because there was never any pressure on me to be a certain size. Everyone was just, they want you to look healthy. And like I was friends with every photographer, you know, absolutely everyone, and it was just such a comfortable environment. And I do want to point that out, my experience of modeling in Ireland was actually always so positive.
That's so good to hear.
Abroad, now look, I don't know, has everyone had the same scenario, but just from my own experience, it was always very positive. It was just abroad that stuff like that happened.
And why do you think, Roz, you've stayed in Ireland? Like, I look at your Instagram, you could probably go anywhere in the world and run your business from there. What is it about Ireland that keeps you here?
I know I keep saying this word, but it's just a sense of community.
Yeah.
Like, if you need a favor, you've loads of people to ask. Like, our neighbors are going to help us out. There's nowhere else in the world that is as tight-knit as Ireland. Obviously, everyone knows each other. We all know each other's business. But I think it's the sense that you feel like people are always there to have your back. And I know for a lot of people, they might be like, oh, that's a sense of comfort. But I guess where you're living and what country you decide to live in, it should feel comfortable, you know? And growing up, I used to always think, I'm going to live in New York. I'm going to live in America. I can't wait to get out of Ireland. And the older I get, the more I realize I can't wait to move back to Tipperary. Like, I cannot wait to be somewhere that really makes me feel happy. And that is Ireland, like.
Yeah.
And preferably down the country.
So that's where, and I know we don't talk about where do you see yourself in 10 years or, yeah. but the dream or what your calling is Tipperary.
Yeah, well, look, I definitely would like to spend a lot more time down there. Mm-hmm. You know, I do love Ireland. I love Irish people. And I know people can sometimes give out about us as being begrudgers and like that. But I think at the end of the day, Irish people have each other's back. Yeah. And we are all secretly super proud of each other. And while I think you and I can sometimes get it online, the odd nasty message, the majority of Irish people are sound. And you just don't get that everywhere else in the world.
I hope you're enjoying my podcast with Roz. I'm really looking forward to her talking about who her guru is. You want to stick around to hear her answer for that. First, I want to take the opportunity to thank ReproMed for supporting the Good Glow this season. A fertility journey is so personal, and ReproMed pride themselves in taking compassionate interest in your care. Having spent time with the team, I know they will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a safe, supportive, and honest environment. ReproMed.ie is packed full of information on IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and so much more. Visit ReproMed.ie. I feel like whenever you walk into a room, you have such a presence.
When I walk into a room, I'm as nervous as hell. Like, I have always had really bad trouble like speaking to new groups.
Really?
And I think it's very different like when I go to Hike Life, because I know people are there to like come to the Hike Life, so I'm like, they're all buzzing to be here. But say for example, on like a social occasion, or I find it really difficult in school and Irish college to actually like talk to people, it's like this part of my brain just goes, I'm gonna be really awkward and say sentences backwards, and I don't know, like remix my words. So I'm as awkward as anyone, you know, and I don't mean that in like, oh, it's a really positive thing, but I mean it in a sense that, you know, I'd never want ever to make anyone feel like they just couldn't go up and say hello, because I'm dying to have a chat. It actually makes me feel so much more comfortable, you know.
And do you find that you're getting good vibes off everyone? Like, do you find that like people are generally really happy to see you? And
so one thing my friends always say about me is like, I can read people straight away.
Mm.
I'll be like, I'll meet someone, I'm like, that person, blah, blah, I'll say it out. And they're like, really? And it will always happen.
Really?
So I'm very good at judging.
You're intuitive.
People. Like, yeah, I have to say I'm very, very good at that. And it's something that people always say to me, that I'm very good at clocking a person's, like, not motives, but I suppose their energy. And like, you know, that's, and I mean this in a good way as well. Like, is in, if I can meet one of my friends straight away, I'd be like, what is going on?
Yeah,
like you're not all right, like, you know. Or if I go to an event, it's not like I'm like, oh god, that person gives me bad energy, but like it could just be like, it's more, I think in this industry you need to kind of understand people a little better as well, because it's a very sometimes strange industry and you need to understand what everyone kind of wants you for,
you know, who your real friends are.
Listen, I've got three friends.
Yeah.
And then my dog's on the side, but like I've got Evan Doherty. He's been my best friend since the photographer. He's been my best friend for like 13 years. We met on a job. We've just always been best friends. My sisters, so there's two of them. And like I have like two other friends and they're like my close knit friends.
Yeah.
Like I'm not someone who has loads and loads of, you know, I have a handful of best friends that like, you know, I'll go and talk to and actually like, I suppose, really fill them in on absolutely everything that's going on. But with everyone else, I am mates with absolutely everyone. Like, I don't think there's anyone I'm not friends with, but I am very like, have my really, really close friends too, you know?
Yeah. And I think as we move through life, that happens, like our circles get smaller, but you're definitely a super attractor. I feel like you're, you know, you're putting out good vibes all the time.
That's good. Yeah. I always thought I wasn't, I was not afraid, but I was always conscious that, I don't know if I was or not. So that's
no,
nice.
You definitely are.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about, who is the person you call? You know, who are you getting the truth from? Who do you go to when you're in crisis? Who do you trust with all your heart and soul?
So, depends what's it for. So, if I'm looking, So, if shit has really hit the fan, I will ring my two sisters. And equally, like, they kind of give off different levels. So Rachel, obviously, you know, Rachel, my sister, she is really great because she works in marketing. So if I have a really bad issue with work, I will ring Rachel because she understands social media. She understands, you know, what I do. She also comes to the Hike Life event. She understands everything. So work-wise, I'll ring Rachel. If I'm having a life dilemma, I'll probably ring my sister Rebecca, just because she is, I always think it's so important to go to someone who's like a decade older than you for advice.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm a wealth of knowledge for 20-year-olds out there. If any 20-year-old wants some advice, I have been through my 20s and I can tell you what not to do, right? Mm. Whereas Rachel and I are quite close in age. There's only 3 years between us. So sometimes we're still only learning the same things. Whereas Rebecca has kind of been through, like, she's just hit 40 now. So she's kind of, you know, gone through her 30s, and she is just the most intelligent person. She makes me feel really bad about myself. No, I'm joking. But she's just one of these, like, she's, you know, the older sister who did a master's and doing a PhD. And
yeah.
You're like, really? Come on. You know, I'm the dud of the family who went to college for a few years, decided, oh no, I'm not going to do it. So she's the one who's putting us all to shame. So I go to her for a lot of my advice. And she's someone I really look up to because she just seems to manage everything so, so well.
We spoke about you being like intuitive and about other people and situations. And are you good at being intuitive with yourself? Like, if you need to rest or if you need to go out into nature, are you able to kind of figure out what you need and have balance always, in your life?
Always a little too late. It's always when I'm about to like break down and cry in the middle of the day. I'm like, oh, okay. I've let myself get a little bit overwhelmed here. So I'm not great with myself. And I'm someone who can dish out the best advice to my friends, but unfortunately, sometimes I just can't take it myself. So while COVID was a bit of a shit show in terms of like breaking routine and, you know, not being able to socialize with people, it's definitely allowed me to take a step back and understand that like rest is just as important as working hard.
And last question, what's in your toolkit? So for me, it's a cold shower if I'm feeling anxious. It's a walk outside if I'm feeling a little bit low in my mood. What sort of things do you turn to? I know you obviously get so much from being out in the woods. Is there anything else though?
My God, a cold shower. Now, I haven't gone there yet. I'd actually rather jump in the sea than a cold shower.
Really?
Oh, I can't do it. Absolutely not. So I guess for me, when I'm feeling quite down or just in general overwhelmed, obviously, look, I think the obvious answer here is I get out hiking, but there's a lot of times when I just can't do that because I'm overwhelmed because I actually have a lot of deadlines and work to do. So what always helps me is sitting down and writing out a plan.
Really? Oh, so you write things down.
Yeah, I'm someone who whenever I feel overwhelmed or I feel like I'm not getting enough done or I feel that, you know, everything's kind of closing in on me, I sit down and write a plan. Because I think once you have it written down in front of you and you almost brainstorm a solution, everything feels a little bit easier.
Yeah, that is such good advice. My husband, Jamie, is always trying to tell me, if you write things down, you're going to feel so much better.
So much better. Now, obviously, look, a lot of people can write things down and not action them. Mm. So what I'm really specific at writing things down. So say if I have huge deadlines and obviously don't have time to go off and go for a hike for 3 hours, I will literally write down my day and my tasks hour by hour. And in that time, I will give my, like, I'll write down like 30 minutes to make food, 30 minutes to sit and enjoy it. Like, I will write down absolutely every detail of the day and set alarms to go alongside that.
Wow. And
it just means that I am now accountable to getting my shit done.
Mm.
And I know that if I stick to this plan, I will get it done. So I can relax. It's going to be done. We just need to follow the plan.
Who is your guru? Like, do you have a person that you turn to or that you read or that you listen to that really helps you?
No. You know what? I don't. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's almost myself. I guess I talk to myself quite a lot. I work at home alone all day. So I am one of those people that I'll have a full conversation with myself, you know, and if I'm, you know, having a bit of a meltdown or I'm like really stressed, I'll be like, I'm literally sitting like, right, okay, what are we going to do about it? So someone probably come by the window and be like, is she okay? But yeah, I guess it's myself. Like, I know, we all know what we need to do when it comes to how we feel, when it comes to getting our work done, when it comes to, you know, what we should do each day. We all know, but we've all gotten so used to people telling us what we need to do or looking for inspiration everywhere else that we forget that we actually know what we need to do. We just rely on other people telling us all the time. Just honestly, sometimes you just tell yourself. And something I always say to people, and because it's something I'm not sure did a counselor say it to me or did I happen to hear it somewhere, it just stays with me that sometimes, you know, if I was having a really bad body day and I would just feel like shit, and sometimes that still happens even though I spent years and years working on it, sometimes you need to be your own best friend. And by that it means, you know, if your friend came into you and they're like, oh, I feel like shit, like I don't want to do anything, you would sit there and you would big them up. You would absolutely make sure that they felt like the sun shined out of their arse and that they walked out of that room feeling great about themselves. And sometimes, unfortunately, when you're at home alone, and you should be able, like you should, I suppose, not be able to, because it's very, very, I suppose, sometimes you're having really bad days, you're not able to do for yourself, but you should be able to do that for yourself. If we can go and do that for our best friends, like, why can't we do that for ourselves? And I suppose I take that into everything. Like, if I'm having a bit of a meltdown around the house, or, you know, I feel like something's going really bad, or I'm feeling really down about something, sometimes it's just like having that chat with yourself, because you know what you need to do. You know what you need to say to yourself, but we just always rely on someone else doing that for us.
Roz, that has just opened my eyes so much, because I think I distract myself. I'm like, oh, I'll listen to this Louise Hay book because she'll tell me what to do, or I'll find the answers in that book. And it's nice to have those things to rely on from time to time. But why am I just constantly distracting myself from myself? Because like you said, the answers are within, aren't they?
Yeah. And look, I think sometimes the answers aren't going to be within, like, say if I had the same mentality now when I was like, I'm suffering from an eating disorder, and it's like, well, I know what I need to do myself. Well, no, I need to go get help. But I mean, now the day to day where I get in a really bad rut, or I've let work completely overwhelm me and I feel like, you know, I'm going to lose the plot, I kind of know what I need to do. And I know how I need to pick myself up, and I know how I need to do that because I've done it before.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and I always go back to, I just write down the plan. And sometimes I just write down, like, if I'm not getting stuff done, or I feel really bad about myself, or, you know, there's something bad that's happening at work, I will literally write down the good stuff. Like, what's important to remember? Like, your brain is twisting the situation. It's turning the scenario into me thinking that this is the worst thing when it's actually not. And I think we're just like programmed to do that. Mm. We're programmed to think the worst case scenario. We're programmed to, if something bad happens, that like, oh my God, bad things happen in three, you know, like, no, you know. So sometimes you just have to remember that you already know what you need to do. You already know what you need to hear. You just need to say it to yourself.
I absolutely love it, Roz. I'm constantly distracting myself. But I think from this conversation, I think I'm going to sit with myself a little bit more. I think I'm going to trust that voice within. Thank you so much for your time today. I think you're so inspiring, and it's just been an honor for me to sit down with you. And I know you don't do that many podcasts, so I'm so grateful to you for your time.
And you know what? The reason I just don't do that many is because I'm always conscious that you know, I'm like, oh God, people are like, Jesus, there's Roz again. She's talking to, you know, so I'm really conscious that to give space to lots of other people out there, because as I said, I've been around a long time, knocked around for a long time. So I'm conscious. I don't want to also take up too much space, because there's also amazing other women out there who have such fantastic stories to tell.
Wow. Roz, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Good Glow podcast with Roz. Thank you so much, Roz, for your time. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to like and subscribe to the podcast, because that makes such a difference. So thank you so much in advance for that. I spoke at the start about choosing not to live in fear. And Jerry Hussey speaks about this on our course, Rise and Thrive, when he says, I can, I am, and I will. He takes our module on inner belief, and it blew my mind. You will be punching the air after listening to Jerry speaking on Rise and Thrive, and I guarantee you, you will feel like you can take on the world. So our Soul Sisters discount code is still live for 20% off, which is our biggest discount yet. So use the code Soul Sisters over on thegoodglow.ie for 20% off Rise and Thrive. Thanks for your time today. Mind yourself, and I'll talk to you very soon.